Behind the Mist by M.J. Evans. Chapter 1, Jazz. The dark head of the horse shot straight up in the air. The bit tore against the soft tissue at the corners of his mouth as the rider pulled on the reins, trying desperately to remain in the saddle. The mud and loose rocks carried them down the side of the cliff. For several feet, the horse was successful as he scrambled to keep upright. But eventually, the steep descent became too much for him, and he started tumbling, carrying his rider with him. Thunder echoed against the canyon walls, but was drowned out by the sound of the waterfall crashing against the boulders at the base. A cold plume of mist rose high into the air. The two bodies rolled and bounced down the side of the cliff. When they landed at the base of the falls, the horse's body was wedged between two sharp boulders. The rider was trapped underneath him, his face pressed against the stones beneath the surface of the water. The mist provided the burial shroud. The waterfall parted like the curtain on a stage. A dapple gray unicorn appeared from behind the mist and stepped out onto his rocky proscenium. His entire body sparkled like silver, and his long horn shone as if it were a beam of light. The unicorn looked down at the dark horse with his soft, liquid eyes. "Come with me, Jazz," the glorious creature said kindly. I cannot leave my rider. Nicholas has his own path to follow. No, I will never leave him.
Five years earlier.
The jagged peaks of the Rocky Mountains stood out proudly several miles to the west as the Boeing 757 jet from Newark landed beside the white peaks on the plains that housed Denver International Airport. The curly-haired boy watched out the window and kept his eyes glued to the mountains, more to settle his churning stomach from the typical rough Denver descent than for any other reason. He kept watching to the west as the plane touched down on the tarmac and taxied toward the B terminal. Nick was 12 years old, and his family was leaving behind the hustle, bustle, and humidity of New York City for 3 months to live in a cabin on the eastern edge of the Rocky Mountain National Park, northwest of Denver, Colorado. As the family drove up to Estes Park, Nick continued staring toward the ridge of mountains from the window of the van his parents had rented for the summer. He had studied the formation of the Rocky Mountains in school. He remembered that they were created as the plates that make up the surface of the earth shifted and collided with one another. His eyes followed the tops of the mountains, from Long's Peak in the north and located in the park itself, to Mount Evans directly west of Denver. His eyes moved down the row of mountaintops to where Pike's Peak stood alone guarding over Colorado Springs. Nick gazed at the majestic peaks with admiration, thrilled to actually be seeing them. He was equally overwhelmed by the enormous sky. The sky did not look this big in New York City, even in Central Park. Behind him, his two younger sisters released their excitement by giggling as they poked one another and, on occasion, him. He ignored them, content to savor the vast expanse of the plains as they gently rolled up to the magnificent mountains that would be their home for the summer. When the van's tires ceased crunching on the gravel drive that wound between the ponderosa pines and aspen, the New Yorkers found themselves in front of the beautiful log home where they would live. The five humans and their dog emerged from the car. Nick and his family stood still for several minutes, taking in their surroundings with every one of their senses. Their skin reveled in the warmth of the sunshine. They heard birds chattering in the trees, pine needles rustling in the breeze and crashing in the big Thompson River as ice-cold water tumbled over rocks behind the cabin. Deep breaths of the thin, aromatic mountain air refreshed and exhilarated them. The cabin was nothing like their brownstone on the west side of Central Park. The exterior was built of whole logs. From there, any reference to a cabin was an extreme understatement. The house rested on a foundation covered with river rocks that had been sanded smooth by the force of the snowmelt in the spring. Each stone was just big enough to fit a man's grasp. A covered stone porch extended across the front and was home to handcrafted log furniture. While the family gawked, their standard poodle, Belle, completed 3 laps around the perimeter of the enormous house, searching for unsuspecting squirrels to chase. Nick was the first to find his tongue. "Wow, Dad, this cabin is awesome!" Nick's mother, Jeannie, chimed in. "Yes, Tom, how did you find such a fabulous place?"
"Talent, my dear, talent," Tom added. "Well, let's not just stand here. What do you say we go into our summer home?"
Once inside, the family stopped again. They stood with their eyes wide and mouths open, gazing around the interior. A large stone fireplace extended 2 stories to the beam ceiling above. The rest of the house was equally extraordinary. The open floor plan included a huge gourmet kitchen, dining area, and living room. All 4 bedrooms were upstairs. Each door opened onto a balcony overlooking the main floor. To a boy such as Nick, raised in a tall, narrow brownstone, houses like this were beyond anything he had ever imagined. However, Nick soon found that he spent very few daylight hours in the beautiful house. Nearby, a local stable offered trail rides into the national park. For a fee, any city slicker could step up on the mounting block, swing their leg over the western saddle cinched to a well-seasoned quarter horse or Appaloosa, grip the horn, and ride to places most people couldn't find on foot. Rides lasted from 1 hour to overnight, depending on what the pocketbook and the seat bones were able to endure. Nick and his family were not the normal summer people that the stable owners, Larry and Carol Crisp, were accustomed to dealing with. Encouraged by their mother, Nick and his younger sisters, Lynn and Nancy, took riding lessons once a week all during the school year at the only riding stable left in Manhattan, the Claremont. This stable, on the west side of Central Park, opened in 1892 as a livery stable, and for nearly a century had been a functioning riding academy for the luckiest New Yorkers. On the second floor of a 4-story historic building, surrounded now by high-rise apartments, the Claremont offered English riding lessons, including jumping and dressage. Once accomplished enough, riders were allowed to go on horseback the 2 blocks to Central Park for a hack on the trails there. As a young child, Nick took to riding immediately. He seemed to understand just how to use his body to communicate with a horse. He had a natural balance and rhythm, and with instruction, learned to use his weight and leg position to direct the horse forward and use his hands lightly to control the power beneath him. Larry and Carol's horses were not the spirited, sensitive power machines that Nick had progressed to in his riding, and the heavy western saddle made it hard to feel the horse beneath him the way he was accustomed to with his English saddle. But a horse is still a horse, and to a horse lover, that is enough. The first summer, Nick spent nearly every day at the Crisps and soon was grooming and tacking up the horses. Before long, he was assisting the trail guides on their group rides. Nick's talent was not lost on the stable owners. He was soon allowed to ride the greenest horses and help train them to become trail savvy. Green is a horseman's term for a young or untrained horse. Becoming a trail horse in Rocky Mountain National Park is not that different from being a stable horse in Manhattan and walking through the busy streets to arrive at Central Park.
A horse has to learn to ignore the external stimuli and trust and obey its rider, whether faced with a honking taxi or a bellowing elk. One horse and rider team must negotiate curbs, manhole covers, and icy streets, while the other must maneuver up rocky inclines, over fallen trees, and across cold, fast-flowing streams. Nick, with the innocence of youth, figured he could handle anything Rocky Mountain National Park had to offer, since he had survived the concrete wilderness of New York City. The second summer did not arrive quickly enough for the New York family. As they flew across the country, Nick pressed his nose against the acrylic window of the jet, searching the ground below for the first sign of the snow-covered Rockies. "There it is! There's Denver! We're almost there!" he said with excitement as he elbowed his sister. Lynn leaned forward to catch a glimpse of the mountains for herself, just as the pilot came over the intercom to announce that they were beginning their descent, a fact that their popping ears and the bouncing plane soon confirmed. Nick rubbed his hands together with anticipation during the drive up to their Estes Park cabin. He helped unload the car quickly, waved a "see you later" to his family, and ran to the Crisps' stable. Carol saw him coming down the dusty road and stepped out of the office. Standing on the wooden planks that formed the porch, she waited for him to reach her. Without taking the time to express her joy at his return, she simply said, "I have a surprise for you. Follow me." Carol never walked slowly, but today she moved more quickly than usual, and Nick had to jog to keep up with her as she led the way around the barn to the round pen. What Nick saw in the pen made his heart skip a beat. There, trotting around the pen with his head held high, was the most beautiful horse Nick had ever seen. The animal was large, maybe 17 hands at the withers. A hand is the equivalent of 4 inches. The horse was dark bay, nearly black, with large, soft, kind eyes. When he moved, he seemed to float. This was no school horse or trail horse. "How do you like him?" "He's awesome," was all Nick could say. "His name is Jazz. He's a Hanoverian, a German breed, bred for that dressage that you like. He's retired now, but he's had quite a show career. He was a Grand Prix champion." "What's he doing here?" "His owner was a school friend of mine. She wanted him to spend his last years with me, away from the arena and the horse shows, just being a horse in the great outdoors. If you're up to doing some training, I'd like to turn him over to you to teach him about trails. He needs too advanced a rider to be any good to me right now, but he has a heart of gold and a good head on him. He just needs experience on our Rocky Mountain trails." Nick immediately knew what a great opportunity this was. He climbed up on the paddock fence and leaned over the top rail. Carol stood beside him, resting one dusty boot on the bottom rail. "Hey, Jazz, come over here, boy," said Nick. Jazz picked up his head and pricked his ears forward. Calmly, he walked over to where Nick was leaning toward him. He stopped right in front of the young boy. The beautiful gelding immediately dropped his head and began chewing and licking, a sign of submission. Nick reached out one hand and rubbed the gelding's face between his eyes. His fingers tickled the two cowlicks that swirled in different directions right in the center of the horse's forehead. "Ah, you noticed the double cowlicks. There's an old Indian legend that a horse with double cowlicks is one of the noble and great ones," said Carol, as she too reached up to stroke the large head. Carol left the paddock fence and disappeared into the tack room. She came back carrying a black dressage saddle. "Well, I can say one thing for these saddles. They're a lot lighter than our Western ones," she said as she handed the saddle over to Nick. After being tacked up, Jazz stood perfectly still while Nick placed his left foot in the shiny silver stirrup, bounced up, and swung his right leg over Jazz's back. He gently sat down in the saddle. With a slight press of his calves against Jazz's sides, the gelding moved forward in a strong, brisk walk. Even at 20 years old, this highly trained horse moved with power and grace. With a gentle hold on the reins, Nick allowed his hands to follow the natural movement of Jazz's head and neck. Carol leaned on the round pen's fence, watching the whole process with respect and admiration for this young East Coast horseman. Horse people know a true horseman, no matter where they hail from or what type of saddle they use. And Carol recognized the talent Nick had in him. "He has the horse gene, Tom," she said to Nick's father later that afternoon as the two of them watched him work with Jazz in the round pen. Tom, who obviously did not have the horse gene, glanced sideways at this cowgirl incredulously. After a few days of working in the round pen, Nick took Jazz on his first short trail ride. Carol came with him on her favorite lead horse, Kit, as they introduced Jazz to the trail. Carol's horse was a large black and white Appaloosa, the alpha male of the herd. As they started out of the stable yard, Kit flattened her ears back against her head, bared her teeth, and tossed her head toward Jazz. The new horse immediately threw up his head and stopped dead in his tracks. From then on, he obediently stayed a few yards back from the mare's steel-clad back hooves, while Kit constantly swished her stubby Appaloosa tail to make sure this new horse in the herd wasn't within striking distance. The powerful bond that can form between horse and human formed quickly between Nick and Jazz. Jazz needed a new leader, and Nick needed a best friend. Nick began taking him alone on the familiar trails used by the trail guides. Jazz learned to cross a rocky mountain stream, picking his way over the slippery rocks. He learned to bend his body around a tree without causing his rider's knees to bang into the trunk. He learned to accept that deer and elk sometimes surprised him by bounding or strolling across the trail. He learned that the bighorn sheep can scale a rock face high above him, and he learned to ignore the chatter of squirrels or the shrill screech of a falcon. Each morning, Nick arrived just as the sun was turning the mountains a bright pink. He always found Jazz staring over the top rail of his paddock, his breakfast of grain and hay already finished. On this particular morning, as soon as Nick was visible around the side of the barn, Jazz shook his beautiful dark bay head up and down and let out a soft, low nicker. Nick went up to him, and Jazz pressed his muzzle against Nick's face and blew out a soft, warm stream of air from his nostrils. Nick cupped his hands around the velvet skin and held Jazz's head in his hands for a minute, looking into his large, dark eyes. Nick gave Jazz a pat on the neck and reached for the halter that hung on the gate. "Let's go to the mountains, buddy," he said. One of Nick's favorite trails in the southeast section of the national park was in an area called Wild Basin. He loved to ride along Bluebird Lake Trail because the path wound past numerous waterfalls and made its way above the timberline to Ouzel and Bluebird Lakes. Beautiful log bridges had been built by the Forest Service, spanning from cliff to cliff in front of the waterfalls. They were a test for any experienced trail horse, but Jazz had learned to trust Nick. So, as they approached the first bridge in front of Calypso Falls, Jazz hesitated for only a moment before he responded to the gentle squeeze of Nick's calves and stepped onto the bridge that spanned across the front of the long and loud waterfall. Nick and Jazz climbed up the trail until they passed all of the waterfalls and left most of the hikers behind on this especially hot summer day. The temperatures in Denver were climbing to over 100 degrees, and even in the high altitude of the park, they were nearing 90. Because of the threat of afternoon thunderstorms, Nick had left the stable with Jazz earlier than usual. They were now all alone on the stretch of trail that climbed above the tree line toward the lakes and the mountain meadows.
Nick rode along, enjoying the beauty of the scenery and feeling the power of the horse beneath him. Jazz was moving up the trail in a marching walk in an attempt to keep the deer flies from biting his legs and belly. He frequently shook his head to use his forelock as a fly swatter for his face. Nick let his perfect English riding posture lapse as his torso moved in rhythm with the horse. He felt secure on Jazz now and didn't feel like he had to be on the alert every minute. Riders call this being loose in the saddle. He was in this position when they passed by a large rocky outcropping. Suddenly, Jazz's head came up with a snort. His ears pricked forward and he came to an abrupt halt. "It's okay, boy," Nick said soothingly, though still lost in his own thoughts. "Everything's okay. Just a shed." He didn't have a chance to finish his sentence before a loud, deep growl sounded in his ears. At that moment, he heard the noise, and before he had a chance to react, a large golden mountain lion sprang from his perch on the rocks above them and crashed against Nick's body. The force of its pounce took both the boy and the lion several feet through the air before they landed to the side of the trail. Nick hit the ground hard with the mountain lion on top of him. A loud grunt escaped his lips as the air was pushed out of his lungs. His instincts took over as he brought his hands up and took a firm hold of either side of the lion's head in a desperate attempt to keep the mountain lion's sharp teeth from reaching his face. The lion's face was no more than 6 inches from his. He looked into the fierce brown eyes, and he felt saliva drip on his nose and cheeks. The young teen was no match for the lion. Nick could feel the lion's front claws rip through the fabric of his shirt and tear at his shoulders. The lion shook his head in an attempt to free himself from Nick's hold. As suddenly as it began, the attack on Nick was over. The boy lay on the ground, staring in disbelief as Jazz picked up the beast with his teeth at the center of the lion's spine. The horse's strong jaws clamped together like a vise as he raised the lion into the air. The lion let out a piercing growl as Jazz violently shook the helpless yellow body and threw him several yards away. The big cat struggled to stand up on his feet. But Jazz was on him again, pounding the lion's ribs with his steel rod-like front legs and sharp hooves. The lion's snarls grew in volume and intensity as he fought for a foothold. Once he found his feet, the large yellow lion made no attempt to fight back against this black fury with its ears pinned back, its teeth bared, and nostrils flaring. The badly injured cat scrambled down the hill and stumbled over a steep ridge. Jazz reared in place and pawed the air as he watched the mountain lion retreat, letting out a loud, threatening neigh. As soon as the threat was gone, Jazz lowered his front legs to the ground and walked over to Nick. The horse's body was shaking and covered with sweat as he lowered his head and blew warm air into Nick's face. Nick struggled to his feet, threw his arms around the horse's neck, and buried his face in his mane. "Jazz, Jazz," he gasped, "you saved my life. You saved my life."